No, welcome, welcome, welcome. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Anthony. We are so excited that you are joining us for week 5 in our series that is called A Grown Up Love. And we are having a lot of fun with this, and we're walking through the most popular love songs of the decades. That was the 90s. And we do this to illustrate a point, because we have taken this word love and we have given it all different types of definitions, the mushy-gushy love or all of that stuff, where we kind of taken this word and given all these different types of contexts. And what we're trying to do in this series of Grown Up Love is to say, okay, well, this is what we have taken that word love to think, to believe, to see, to mean. What does God say that a grown up love, what does it mean to really, really love? And like I said, this is a week 5. So if you've missed a week, I want to encourage you to go back, watch on the live stream, listen on the podcast. A shout out to those who are watching that way right now, because it's really been an incredible, incredible series. And we've been walking through kind of the love passage, if you will, from 1 Corinthians 13, which most of you have heard if you've been to a wedding. But it's also this verse in verse 11 really kind of points out what we're talking about here. It says, "When I was a child, I spoke and thought and reasoned as a child, but when I grew up, I put away childish things." And so we've been walking through week 1. We looked at this kind of, this famous phrase that they lived happily ever after when they found the one, and we realized that's not really true. That's not the way that it works. And in week 2, we talked about that we have to learn to be patient with the other person. And then week 3, we talked about, love is not when we celebrate ourselves or find somebody to celebrate ourselves, but actually when we celebrate other people. And last week, Pastor Chris walked us through beautifully, what it means that forgiveness isn't about kindness, but justice. And we're continuing our kind of verse by verse exploration of this love passage. And it's interesting because, like I said, it's been kind of famously called the love chapter. And as we approach the end of this particular letter that Paul wrote to the church in Corinth, even though it's towards the end, it really has kind of become the thematic center of the entire first letter to the Corinthians. And in it, Paul is really trying to get people to realize that there is a contrast in what we've taken the word love to mean and what God really means love to be. And in the Greek translation, the original Greek, he uses the word, God's word for love, which is agape. And that's it right there. Everybody say agape. You all speak Greek. Great. So ultimately what this love means is that, and there's a few words for love in Greek in the Bible, but this particular word, agape, means that it is, and I love this definition for it, is it love which rests on a decision to seek another's highest and greatest good. This is the unmerited and selfless love that describes God's love towards us, and therefore shows our responsibility as those who are walking with Christ to show towards other people. And it's interesting, all throughout this chapter, in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, Paul is trying to say, okay, this is not agape, this is agape. And he says it this way. He says, love is patient and kind. Love is not jealous or boastful or proud or rude. It does not demand its own way. It's not irritable and keeps no record of being wronged. It does not rejoice about injustice, but rejoices whenever the truth wins out. Love never gives up, never loses faith, is always hopeful, and endures through every circumstance. So I think we keep this, we read this at all these weddings. We might have it even printed out and put on our wall, because when we look at it, we say, yeah. That's love. That's it. Good job. That's true. I can get behind that. And it's interesting that we use the phrase true love, right? You Princess Bride fans, true love. True love, who's my one true love, right? I think the reason that we use that and the reason that we see that here, what Paul is saying, is that love, true love, requires truth. And so as we continue this exploration of what it means to love well and to put away the childish idea of love and to really have a grown-up love, we're looking at specifically the rest of verse 6, where it says, it does not rejoice about injustice, but rejoices whenever the truth wins out. So essentially, it says love requires truth. And again, we can get behind that. We're like, yeah, I'm tracking. I'm with you. Love requires truth. I like truth. We like truth. Nobody says I hate truth. Lie to me. Right? If you're Jack Nicholson, you can't handle the truth, you know? It's a terrible Jack Nicholson impression. Part of us wants the truth, and we like the truth. But we don't always like the truth, right? We like the truth when the truth helps us win. Right? I mean, we like winning. Whether it's in an argument or just in general, we like to win. And I think, you know, this is the childish thing that we see in this passage that Paul's really trying to turn us away from. Because if you've ever been around children, you know that they like to expand on the truth a little bit sometimes, right? And most of it is very innocent. This past week, I got to have a wonderful experience where I was down in Guatemala with our partners in Potter's House at their staff retreat, and I got to speak to them, and some of them have kids, and I saw two of them interacting with each other, and they were talking about how much, you know, how much more they can eat than each other. And I said, kids, you've met your match. And they were like, oh, I can eat a cow. And the other one's like, I can eat a whole horse. And I can eat this. And it like expanded into the kid was like, well, I can eat a whole house. And, you know, it was just, it was adorable. But we can see that even as a child, we had this idea of like, I want to win. Even if that means stretching the truth just a little bit. Part of us wants to win. And part of us likes the truth when it helps us do that. I mean, have you ever been in an argument where you are for sure, sure that you have the right answer, that you are absolutely speaking truth, and then you find out that you weren't right? It stinks. My wife and I do this a lot in my marriage, but I'm just being honest with you. My wife Dana and I, we had this little pond in the backyard that when we moved in, it was, you know, this, it was gross and it just held water and slugs and stuff. And so we were hoping to get rid of it or, you know, cover it up in some way. And we're walking through Home Depot and I had this brilliant idea. I said, I'm going to bring, I what if we put bricks over it? We just put bricks over it and it's like, it lives under there and becomes this little like, you know, walkway. We can put like a chair or something over there. It'll be great. My wife's like, that's not going to work. And I'm like, just relax. It's going to work. And so I bought, it felt like a ton of bricks, right? And I put them in the back of our car, and I'm like, this is going to be great. And I lugged it through the house, and I opened up our backyard, and I started to lay the bricks. And I was like, this is going to be genius. I'm a genius. And she's like, it's not going to work. And I'm like, stop it. It's going to work. And then you get to the pond part, and you realize that there's nothing to hold the bricks up because bricks sink, Anthony. And I just kind of looked back, and she was staring at me, and she's like, I told you so. And I was like, I knew that. I knew that was going to happen. Just testing you. We use that phrase, like, well, that's not what I meant. Or we use the phrase, like, well, no, I didn't say that. And I use that as a funny example, but it's true. I mean, I think we bring this into conflict. We bring these little lies into it. That phrase of like, well, no, I didn't say that, or that's not what I meant. What I meant was, I mean, we hide things and we manipulate things sometimes to get what we want, or we hide things, we manipulate things to sound better, to win in the situation. You know, I always think about that in terms of like when we first start dating someone. You know, I always joke that in the first 3 months of dating someone, you're really kind of dating their representative. You know, like the best version of them. Like the first 3 months, you're like, I'm pretty great, aren't I? And then by month 4, you're like, oh, there you are, Peter. You know what I mean? You're like, oh, yeah, where was that in the first 3 months? You know, but we get that kind of, you know, we get those interactions with each other where it's like, oh, you're like, oh, you like this? And you're like, yeah, I like that too. And you're like, I've never heard of that in my life. This backfired on me in high school. I had a crush on this girl, and I found out that her favorite book was Pride and Prejudice, and like most men, haven't read it. And I read the cover and the back. And I walked up to her and I was like, "Hey, I hear you like this book too." And she's like, "Oh my God, I love Pride and Prejudice. You love Pride and Prejudice?" I was like, "Oh my God, I love Pride and Prejudice too." She's like, "What's your favorite part?" And I was like, "You know, I like the Pride stuff. The Prejudice stuff, I'm not such a huge fan of." And she's like, "Oh, that's so sweet." And then it kind of backfired because we went out a couple of times and she was always like, "I love it when Mr. Darcy says this. What is that thing that Mr. Darcy says? Oh, Mr. Darcy's this." And I was like, "I hate this Mr. Darcy guy." And it just kept coming up and up and up and up again. We have to be careful. We have to be careful what you say that you like, because you're going to have to live in that forever. She probably still thinks I like that book. But we manipulate the truth to get what we want. And we think that when we win, we win. And however, I think the truth is that when we manipulate the truth to get what we want, we lose. I mean, think about it in terms of like online dating profiles, right? I mean, we think it's a good idea to put this like airbrushed glamour shot with a frosted lens that was taken 10 years ago, and we're so excited that we get all of these interests, but you can't figure out that when you like actually go on a date with a person and you might be standing right in front of them and they're like looking around and you're like, "Hey," and they're like, "I'm just waiting for someone." No. We think we're winning, but we actually manipulate the truth there a little bit. And what Paul is trying to get us to understand here, and I think God's really trying to get us to understand this throughout the story of Scripture, is that love rejoices when truth wins. Love rejoices when there's no manipulation of truth. Love rejoices when there's no withholding of the truth. It rejoices when truth wins. Because what he's saying here is that true love is more concerned with thriving than winning. I mean, I think we could all get on the same page that we want our love, we want our marriages, we want our relationships to thrive, right? I mean, here's the definition of thrive. I want my relationship to grow, to develop well, to prosper, to flourish. I mean, yeah, that's what I want my relationship to do. I want my love to do that. I want it to do all that. But guess what? It can't do that in a lie. We often exchange thriving for winning. And yeah, you may get what you want, but you've undermined the relationship. We've all heard the famous phrase, relationships are based on trust, right? Well, trust is based on truth. They even have the same first three letters. And you can't have a relationship built on trust without the truth. Because love rejoices when the truth wins, because even if it means that I lose, we thrive. I think it'd be safe to say that God is big on truth. He likes the truth. You know, if you're going to give 10 commandments on something, maybe it's important, so thou shalt not lie. You want to pay attention to it, right? That's it. But it carries on throughout. It carries even through the life of Christ. It carries throughout. It's throughout the entire story of Scripture. God is not big on lies, but he is very big on the truth. Jesus said this when speaking to his disciples. Jesus said to the people who believed in him, "You are truly my disciples if you remain faithful to my teachings, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free." It's found in John 8:31-32. The truth will set you free. Why? Because when you allow dishonesty to creep into your relationship, you are now in slavery. Lies are high maintenance. Lies require work. Think about it, all right? You're in a conversation with somebody and something pops up and it gives you that in, right? It gives you that opening to be able to tell a lie that would make the situation ease, right? It's getting a little heated. You want to maybe, okay, this lie presents itself. It kind of creeps in and says, "Hey, psst, come here. just use me and I'll serve you in the situation. And you're thinking to yourself, yeah, okay. All right, all right, lie. I got you. I'm going to use you. And then you use the lie. And then what happens? Instantly, the lie goes, great. Now you're going to serve me. Because it's there. Because it starts to build strength from there, because now it's out in the open. Now you've got to continue to use it. Now you've got to continue to breathe life into it. Now it's gotten you. Now it's enslaved you, because it's out there in the open. And it moves in. Think about it. Think about a lie that you have once told in your life. And those of you who are sitting here right now going, well, Anthony, I don't lie. Think about that lie that you just told and use that. Because it moves in. Kind of like an unwanted house guest, and it just sits there. This lie that starts to fester. And it comes up. And maybe this lie doesn't necessarily hurt anything in the long fall, but it's still there. It still presents itself. And it starts to trap you. The only way to make it go away is to bring it into the light. It's tough when you have to live in that lie. We're about to get a theme here. When I was in college, there was this girl I liked, and I had studied a couple years in New York, and then I transferred into the University of Northern Colorado, even though I grew up in Colorado. All right, that's right, go Bears. And three people know where the University of Northern Colorado is. And I grew up in Colorado. I left for 2 years. I came back, but I came back from New York. And so the people that didn't know, we were like, oh, this guy's from New York. And I kind of liked that. Even though I was from like 45 minutes down the road, I kind of liked the fact that I was from New York. And this girl that I liked that I was working with at the Outback loved the fact that I was from New York. And I was like, yeah? And she's like, yeah, and I love the New York accent. And I was like, yeah? No kidding. And, oh man, I'm an idiot. Such an idiot. I just kept it up. Yeah. I worked there for 2 years. Oh man. And it was awful because there were people that knew where I was from and what I was doing that would be working. But I'd be like in the middle of a conversation with somebody and she'd walk by and I'd be like, yeah, you know what I mean? Eventually, she found out the truth, and needless to say, it didn't go well. But I every time I went to work, I didn't know who I was going to be, Anthony or Joe Pesci. You know, it's funny, it is, but it literally had trapped me every time I went to work because I was living in this lie. Yeah, it would have been easy. It's stupid if I was just like, I was just kidding. I don't sound like that at all. But I kept it going, and it just sat there and lived there. And by the time she found out the truth, it was like, gross. Who are you? I was like, I don't even know anymore. I tell you this to say, don't allow dishonesty to enter into your relationship. The Proverbs has this beautiful, not a beautiful, but a perfect picture of what it means to lie. 17:20 says, the crooked heart will not prosper. The lying tongue tumbles into trouble. It's that image of it just spiraling out of control. You got to keep it up. You got to continue it. It is exhausting. And truth be told, what you gain in the moment will never outweigh what you lose. If you're married, at a lot of weddings, I hear this in the vows that we promise to love one another unconditionally, that we promise to love one another in this agape love, and yet some of us are still afraid to show our spouse pieces of ourselves. I mean, without honesty, though, having intimacy the way it's intended in marriage is nearly impossible, and the enemy would love to convince you otherwise. He loves to come in and just say, oh, come on it. It's just this one area. But the problem with that is that it just kind of, even if it's the smallest little lie, into a relationship, especially into a marriage, into a commitment, you're sitting there in a person that you want to be intimate with and built on trust, even when that door remotely opens, it gives way for the door to open wider to an even bigger lie later on. You're like, wow, okay, I got away with that one. And I got away with that one. And I got away with that one. Pretty soon those little lies are turning into big, deeper, and darker lies. Lies about where you've been. Lies about what you've done. All because you had that one little moment of, it's okay. But no. All of a sudden, now these lies are ruling over you. They may have served you in the moment, but you're definitely serving them now. So what do we do? It's easy for me to stay up here and say don't lie, but we all interact with it in one way, shape, or form. So here are some points that we've put together to be able to kind of illustrate great ways to take dishonesty out of the relationship completely and ways that you can maintain trust in a relationship. So the first point is this. Don't put the other person in a place that you want them to lie to you. How do I look in these? If you gotta ask, change. I'm serious. Listen, I have become a much better dresser since I've gotten married. I never asked the question to begin with because if I just headed to the door and something my wife didn't like, she's like, what are you wearing? And I was like, nothing. You going outside like that? Nope. Just wanted you to know I have this option. Not together, but these are pants and this is a shirt. I'm a much better dresser now that my wife is in my life. I have this, I literally, if you look at the before pictures and the after pictures of me, I mean, I call it my BC and my AD, before classy and after Dana. Like it is, I am much better. But don't put the other person in a place where you want them to lie to you. Do you think she's attractive? What? Don't do it. You don't want them to grow comfortable lying to you. The next point is this. Don't expect the other person to know. What's the lie that we believe here? Real love can read minds. I remember it was probably our first big fight after we got married, Dana and I. And I had just got done putting all the dishes into the dishwasher. We turned it on. I have this really weird thing where I can't go to bed if the kitchen's dirty. I'm working through it. And God forbid Dana had a bowl of cereal and she put the bowl in the sink. And I was like, really? And she was like, what? And I was like, you don't know? She's like, no. And I was so stupid now that I think about it. And I'm sure if you think about all these big arguments they had, they were up for something equally as stupid. But don't put the person in that phrase. A lot of you in a marriage know that that is probably the most scary. Those are the three scariest words in the English language. Well, you should know. And I don't. You're not being honest when you're expecting them to try to figure it out. The next point is this. And this one was probably the hardest for me to write down because it's the one that I struggle with the most. Don't punish the other person for being honest. And if I'm being honest, because that's our theme today, I'm not good at this. This is where I struggle. Because I like to sit up here and say, yeah, I want you to tell me the truth. I like the truth. Let me know the truth. But then I take it personally. Or then I get defensive. And it makes it really hard for the other person to want to tell me the truth in that situation. Because the lie that we believe here is, well, love would have lied to me. And I know I've done it. I know I've gone into the situation, even with my wife, where I've like asked her a question and I'm hoping she'll lie to me. Because I know the answer is not something I want to hear. And maybe you've experienced this in your own relationship, or maybe you're experiencing this in your marriage right now where you're nervous to tell your spouse about something because you're nervous about how they're going to respond, or vice versa. Maybe they've said something to you and it's still not sitting well with you. And so it's sitting there and growing. Don't put the other person in a place where they're punished for being honest, because sometimes honesty can hurt. But you want to be able to be in a partnership with someone where they know it's okay because they love you. And they want your love to thrive. The next point is kind of a sister to this point, and it's very important that we remember this point in conjunction with this. Honesty is not dumping on another person. What's the lie here? Well, I'm just being real. No, you're being hurtful. It's real easy to come out of here today to say, well, Anthony said I can do this. No, I didn't. If you're in a relationship with someone, especially if you're in a marriage with someone, at some point you start to know every single thing that you can do to hurt this person, or celebrate this person, or love this person well. You have the power to hurt this person more than probably anybody else. And if you're confronting this person with something and being honest with this person about something, you don't want to hurt them. In fact, there's a lot of instruction throughout Scripture about how we're supposed to approach people in this situation. James 1:19 says this, "Understand this, my dear brothers and sisters. You must all be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to get angry." Honesty doesn't leave kindness at the door. In fact, I love this next verse in 1 Peter 3:15 through 16 that says, "You must worship Christ as the Lord of your life. And if someone asks you about your Christian hope, always be ready to explain it. But here's the point. But do this in a gentle and respectful way. Keep your conscience clear that if people speak against you, they will be ashamed when they see what a good life you live because you belong to Christ." Remember, honesty works because you genuinely care about the other person. The next point is this. Don't equate truth with opinion. And what's the lie here? Well, my opinion is truth. What does the verse say? It does not rejoice about injustice, but rejoices whenever the truth wins out, not when the opinion wins out. And truth is not determined by you. Truth is determined by God. That is why it is so important to have a common ground when it comes to truth. It's important to be on the same page about what you believe and know about God, because that is the source of our truth. That is where we find truth. That is where we go to find out what the truth is based on the lie that has presented itself. That is why it is important. This isn't about sharing your opinion. It's about sharing truth. Look at what it says in Proverbs 18:2. "Fools have no interest in understanding. They only want to air their own opinions." Now listen, I'm not saying that having an opinion is wrong. That is not true. You should share your opinions, but share them as opinions. Be honest when they don't align with truth. Dana and I do this all the time. I have an opinion about the amount of science fiction she watches. She has an opinion about the large amounts of baseball that I watch. Her opinion is wrong. I'm just kidding. It is, but I'm just kidding. But there has to be a time when truth and opinion meet. And here it is. The truth is that we have to be honest about when our opinion doesn't matter. And yes, there are times that it doesn't matter. See, that's how we start to find out that trust is really the foundation of a relationship. I said this last service, but I couldn't figure out another way to do it, but it's really true. There is something beautiful about being in a relationship with someone where you're completely open and honest with them. It's freeing. You've got nothing to hide. You've got nothing to hide from them. You are open. You are honest. It is beautiful. When you trust your partner, Dana and I were talking about this leading up to this message. One of the things that she was like, you know, I think something that good that illustrates this is that we could at any point right now pick up each other's phones and we'd be fine with that. We are open and honest. And yes, listen, the reason I'm putting all of these points together is not because I figured it all out. I told you which one that I struggle with the most. This is to be open and honest, to let you know that there is a way to be able to get rid of the childish thing that we have on love and to be able to pursue this agape love, this unconditional love that Jesus Christ has literally rained down upon us. And I know some of you are saying right now, listen, Anthony, I understand this, but I don't want to get hurt. When I'm honest, I let a wall down. Yeah. I've been there too. Vulnerability is only possible when you trust the other person. And it's in that vulnerability that can lead us to real, honest, grown up love. Christ himself modeled this vulnerability for us. This is how God interacts with us. There's a passage in Proverbs that I think kind of lovely, you know, gives us one of the reasons that makes it hard for us to be honest. It says, "The fear of human opinion disables. Trusting in God protects you from that." And here it says, you know, we're afraid of them because they don't trust what God has said. We're afraid of the situation because we don't trust what God has said. And what God is trying to really give us in these passages about what love is and about what truth is and what honesty is that this is how Christ has loved us. He looks at us. He sees all of our lies. He sees all of our secrets. And yet still rains down that perfect, unconditional, agape love on us. Unmerited. And he's saying, this is love. This is what we should strive for. Psalm 44:21 says, God would surely have known it, for he knows the secrets of every heart. He knows our secrets. Even those deep and dark ones that we said, if we ever brought those into the light, how could anyone love us? Guess what? Not only does Christ already know, he still already loves you unconditionally. Yet he so desires that his relationship with you thrives that he has shown that agape love. And in that, he asks, we should do that to others as well. That was God's purpose for when he created us. That if we could imagine that God can love us with that agape love, that we could love God with that agape love, and that we could love others with that agape love, that unconditional love that we don't deserve, but God freely gives. Imagine if we could instill that same kind of agape love into our relationships. We'd be throwing away the childish love for sure into a mature, growing, and thriving. God doesn't undermine the truth in our relationships. He's asking us to not compromise on this. We have to allow the truth into all of our relationships. And maybe the hardest part about it is celebrating truth, even if it's difficult to hear. All of you are on different paths in this interaction with truth right now. Some of you are needing to accept the truth of how God loves you. Some of you need to dive into the truth of what God says about you. And some of you right now are hanging on to a lie that you need to bring into the light to be able to start to let that truth heal and help your love thrive. Wherever you are, the truth has the ability to set you free. It's when we sit there and we're open and honest and vulnerable with God that He is able to then start to do that work. I made the joke because this is the beginning of what it was like to be on the Titanic. But this is what we need to be in front of God. Open, honest, vulnerable, to allow the truth to work inside of us so that then the truth, which comes from God, the foundation in us, can begin to pour out on others. That is my prayer and my hope as we continue to see what it means to have a lasting and powerful grown-up love. Will you pray with me? Father, I want to thank you for what it means to love. You've painted this beautiful picture. This picture that sometimes is hard for us to see because we live in a world that doesn't always interact with love like this. So, Father, my prayer is that this agape love that you have given us, this unconditional, unsurrendered love, is something that we can receive. That we can trust your word and trust what you said is true. That when we walk into this relationship with Jesus Christ, that we are a new person. And those lies that we have told and the secrets that we've held are all covered because of your Son, Jesus Christ. And that we can start to build a foundation on what is true. And on what truth is. Because everything you give is the source of truth. Father, my prayer is that we will bring this into our relationships. Relationships with our spouse. Relationships with our significant other. Relationships with our friends, with our family. You have lavished this unconditional, unmerited love on us. And help us to do that on others as well. It's because of Jesus, and it's in His name we pray.